Assalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome, listeners, to our show Teacher Moms with myself, Shaista Token, and my friend Sumeya Bulbulia. For first-time listeners out there, Teacher Moms is an education-based show here on Radio Islam International. And our mission for the show is to bridge the gap between educators and parents in terms of communication.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Learners can tune in on medium wave 1548, satellite free to air decoder, audio sharing at radioislam.co.za and DSTV channel 826. Please feel free to send us any comments or questions on 083-306-7940.
Sumeya, let me quickly take this opportunity to apologize to our listeners out there for our voices being less vibrant as usual than usual. It is that both of us have a terrible flu, and I'm sure you'll agree, Sumeya, this term has really just hit us hard. It was short, busy, and the erratic climate conditions were just the cherry on the top.
100% Shaista. I mean, when we spoke to our listeners last, we were getting into back to school, and now we're full force, actually ready to attack assessments for term one.
Okay, so we're going to approach the second half of the term pretty soon, and already for this term,
we've had so many disruptions, and that is why our chosen topic for today is actually on how external forces affect our South African school system in terms of unions, protests in universities, politics, as well as all the violence that has been available for us to actually view in the media.
These impacts have been some larger than others. So the first one being the absenteeism during the planned COSATU strike this term. So already this term we had one planned union strike. So let me get into it, because I had a lot of parents that were sending me questions to say, do I send my child to school or don't? So to start off, let us see what is actually COSATU. It's the Congress of South African Trade Unions. This is a representation. Now, in the education sector, we have SATU and NAPTOSA, who represent educators. And at various schools, there are different educators which either belong to SATU or to NAPTOSA.
So for anyone whose children actually attend a public or semi-private school, you would know that the strike that took place for 2019, SATU was only active in the strike. So there were some teachers which were available at school, some which weren't, and actually teachers that chose to be a part of the SATU / COSATU national strike had to actually complete a register indicating whether they were partaking in the strike action.
So coming to answer the parents that did SMS me their questions, I said it's very simple. The idea behind the representation of unions and the protests and things should not ideally disrupt schools and affect schools. And I specifically emphasized on the word ideally, because there will be teachers present at all times. So schools should be the normal. It should go as planned. Because these protests are also voluntary, a lot of educators don't attend. So as an educator, I am telling you and encouraging you to please send your child to schools unless school management has sent out official notices. Like merely a school teacher telling a child, do not attend school because I won't be here, does not stop the learning process. There are other teachers. Your child will have some structure in the day. And I think not base it on what your child is telling you.
No, definitely. And then also for parents who have learners in private schools do not belong to unions. And many times parents actually get confused with us when they hear about the SATU, NAPTOSA, COSATU strikes on the news. They actually wonder whether they should send their kids to school, and private school educators do not partake in strike action.
And again, it's not a process that harms the child in any way or the disruption that goes to the schools per se. Let's talk about this in terms of, I'm speaking freely because I advocate for trade unions. I belong to one. I represented one. And I feel like they protect our rights as educators. So parents coming in with no idea of what trade unions are, they actually representatives of educators. They fight for our rights in terms of the new legislation or maybe salaries and wages. Again, coming to the fact that we as teachers, in order for us to be productive at our schools, we need to be happy with our working conditions. And this representation for fair working conditions comes through unions.
100%, and teachers are also breadwinners in homes who have commitments that they need to see to. And it's important to remember that we all use the word union slightly with a negative connotation. But South Africa has a long history of activism, and unions were a huge part of the breakdown of apartheid, and it's something that should never not be considered when we are dealing with unions. Like you said, they fight for the rights of the people. In fact, if you look at university activism together with unions, they were a huge political force in the country pre-democracy. And protests are always planned. And unions are legal bodies, so they encourage peaceful protest. The problem, however, comes in when the members of the union, which against the advice of the actual union themselves, take the protest to a level of violence, etc.
I think bringing into layman's terms, when you belong to any sort of committee or organization, a control factor is very limiting as a member. And sometimes we do get situations, I mean, if you look at how a government is run, where the best interest of the member, of the taxpayer, is never at the top of the priority list. So sometimes these things do get out of control, and protests get out of control, or the manner in which it is conducted or shown to us through media. I mean, media sort of portrays a certain stance in which they take via whether it's pro or against the specific protest or march. So we need to make informed decisions for ourselves in terms of our safety. However, when it comes to your child telling you there is a meeting or a strike or a protest, my educator will not be at school, please make sure that you are aware that schools will be carrying on as per normal.
And if it is not, or if there is ever a danger of violence due to strike action, then the school will always send out adequate information telling parents then, please keep your child at home, there is a risk of violence, school will be closed for a certain period of time or indefinitely. Nobody ever wants to put our youth in danger.
Of course.
So like Shaista said, coming back to, please refer to communication from schools. Steer away from parents on WhatsApp groups saying,
yes,
don't send our kids to school tomorrow. If it's a one day, like in 2019 January, it was a one day planned peaceful protest. So, and because there was a union that was not joining the protest, there were a fair number of educators still at school, and that is why it was absolutely safe and fine for your learner to attend school that day.
Coming back to just remind parents to please join the D6 communicator, where all schools are now, according to the basic Department of Education, we need to be part of the communication tool of D6. Alerts will go out, messages, communication from schools will go out. So parents need to use that as their tool of communication, and whether decisions should be made from there. Again, speaking amongst yourselves and in creating the state of panic only heightens situations
and
negative connotations.
Also, sometimes communicating directly with educators. Sometimes you have friends who are educators who are not actually educators in the school your child attends. They can't maybe give the clear perspective of what is going on in your child's school or your children's school. So take the official communication as the guide for whether to send your child to school or not.
You know, Samaya, I had a question in the week as why we're discussing politics on an education show. And it's a very good question, because what we found is that politics, unions, violence, all these type of things are now feeding slowly into their way into schools as well as into the education sector, where to the extent where now Parliament has portfolio committees which deal specific to education, because we've got all these threats now entering our school systems?
You won't believe that South Africa is actually they've actually identified the need to psychologically analyze why rioting takes place, because it's such a rife form of protest in our universities, etc. And they believe that maybe we should go beyond just they should get over themselves, etc. And they just want to break our buildings. Beyond looking at that kind of thinking, and now analyze psychologically what drives our South African youth to riot, to take a protest beyond peaceful and turn it into rioting.
I actually read an article in the week while I was doing research for our topics, and it said that South Africans specifically have been identified as a riot-based culture because our voices are not enough anymore. We need to protest. We need to have physical actions. We need to put ourselves into positions like that. Then only will our voices be heard. But that's actually not the case. Therefore, psychology comes into play as to you need to also find other techniques and methods on how to get your messages across. And our kids are learning this riot-based culture.
But yes, and getting back to how does it affect the school system, because rioting is particularly rife in universities, but it all has a ripple effect. And when we feel that we can get gratification from this type of action, it's almost like learned behavior in our youth. And you'll hear I don't know if you hear it in the classroom, I often hear where the children will joke about we're going to riot, trying to strike, and let's break the buildings. And it should never be treated lightly or as something humorous.
And also, here in Lanesia itself, recently, a few years ago, I'm not even sure, but I always use it as an example in business studies, where learners of a particular school refused to enter the gates when there was change in management. They were they were protesting with boards, signboards and placards outside the school gates against the change in management. Comes to the point where lack of knowledge, so you don't understand the level it takes, or the point in which it reaches a union then to make a decision like taking to the streets, chalk down, striking. It's been a process prior to that stage. So that is maybe the final stage of when your voice is not being heard. Prior to that, there's a whole lot of discussions, meetings, legislation.
100%.
Yes. So educators need to also, in those moments of when children are volunteering that information, pens down or so forth, need to explain the process before it reaches that. Do you understand why there was a change in management? Do you find that there are pros and cons to it? Did you weigh your options? Conversation.
But also, Shaista, I think that doesn't come particularly from children's knowledge of unions, because remember, children only study unions in economic and management science and at a grade 9 level. I think it's from what children view on the media, because if you look at just the 3-year history of what our universities had actually suffered through, where children could not write exams, libraries were broken, burnt, infrastructure was completely destroyed, it's almost as though that placard, that protest, the mannerism, it's learned behavior from what they have viewed as not acceptable, from what they have viewed as a way to get what you want.
And you know, with the whole fees must fall, it became a slogan that's been commonly used, and the effectiveness of it. So they grasped certain things from certain protests that were successful. But you know what's scary is that they're actually mimicking negative behavior.
No,
they find it acceptable.
Like I said, it's learned behavior, and almost an action that can be taken for anything that they disagree with. And remember that in unions, as well as in any form of activism, it's you only take protest action when something is serious, when there is a possibility for actual change to be made. And our children are viewing the media, looking at just pictures that they see of the rioting that's taking place in universities, and it's almost as though they get the feel or
it's
the
enticing.
Idea. It's enticing, yes, and it intrigues them, and anything that doesn't go their way, they don't understand the reasoning, like you said, behind it. It needs to be a big issue. It needs to be something that the majority agrees on.
I'm sure parents out there will agree that a child doesn't understand no anymore. it's negotiations until a yes is a possibility. So no is not just no anymore.
100%, and that you find in every aspect of life. And it's because of the media, and you find that they live in a world of instant gratification. If you just look at Google, no child has to ever take a walk to a library anymore. Everything is at the touch of a button. They literally have to enter in what they're searching for, find the appropriate source, and the information is available to them. And that is why when they are forced to either exercise patience or carry out any form of hard work, you'll find our kids throwing tantrums, and this tantrum-like mindset is what leads to the rioting and the violence.
Okay, so moving on to something positive. I was listening very keenly to the budget speech this year because I had to actually teach it. So I was pleasantly surprised when the Minister of Finance, Tito Mboweni, announced that the government is committed this year, especially towards fee-free education to higher education institutions in South Africa, which
that's
means
only for disadvantaged
yes,
children.
But now, listen, the positivity comes in where it says that it's going to be merit-based and not class position-based. And it's actually a good thing because we have the caliber of learners that are ambitious, that are really working hard at schools. So I think slowly but surely we don't have to view politics in just what is the government not doing, but also see the change that they're trying to instill. Obviously, one of the biggest challenges there, where it says fee-free paying, is capacity of universities. But I think a very positive stance heading towards a good direction by the government for youth in South Africa who want to qualify and work in this country. And I saw a stat that was horrifying that I shared with my matriculants. It was Wits University accepts 5,664 applicants on average. However, 56,901 applications come to them. So again, picking and choosing for those seats in terms of demographics, in terms of merit,
yes, because
it's very difficult.
And it's not just academic-based. Like you said, we come from a country with a tragic history, so it's based on your race. Every child becomes a statistic, sorry, my voice, listeners. And again, like you mentioned, Shaista, you said they get 56,000 and something applicants. But look at the amount of children that actually matriculate. That 50,000 is actually a drop in the ocean, and which is one of our biggest universities. Another very, very pleasant thing in the budget speech this week was that the largest allocation was actually made towards education, 262.4 billion, and not just for the free fee paying initiative, sorry, listeners, but also to maintain all the infrastructure that has been destroyed over the years, in terms of lack of maintenance, in terms of, due again to our tragic history, quality of the materials being used. And I don't know if you know, last year in South Africa, four learners actually died when a bridge fell in one of our schools. So it's a very, very positive thing that the government has identified that they need to upgrade our buildings for schools and also upgrade the facilities for our children, especially, and this is where I say this very positively, especially in disadvantaged areas. Because if you look at our community, then the facilities that our public schools have in terms of the number that fill them, we don't have everything that could be available and that is available in schools of privileged areas.
And definitely, I would agree that education is the starting point and would be the fixing tool to a large number of our socioeconomic issues like crime and poverty, unemployment, because with that skill and knowledge, they are able to equip themselves to be placed in jobs. And once everyone, in the long run, the ideal life would be for every graduate to have a job in the career in which they studied and therefore have the homes and have the lives that they want and appeal to them, getting rid of a lot of the socioeconomic issues.
No,
so 100%. Education is definitely a very good start to where we're headed.
Because remember that the world, one of our two main main struggles that need to be addressed is unemployment, number one, and then world hunger. And obviously unemployment is what leads to hunger, because if you don't have an income, you cannot feed your families. And educating children actually eliminates unemployment, and eventually in the long run, we hope, would eliminate world hunger. One of the very, very important things I tell my children is that more than anything that I can give you, after your Islamic knowledge, your knowledge that's going to help you in the akhirah, is an education in this world, because it's something that nobody can take away from you ever.
Prophet ﷺ did mention lifelong learning from the cradle to the grave.
We're gonna break for a quick air break, and we'll continue with the discussion when we get back.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back to Teacher Moms with myself, Shaista Token, and my friend Sumaya Bulbulia.
Okay, so when we left off, we were talking about the national budget and the positives that were actually very pleasant for our citizens this year. But going in line with that, the national budget is not the only part of politics that have an effect on the school system. If you take 2019, for example, this is an election year. So there is that possibility of much change, of unknown to come. There may be a reshuffling cabinet, etc., new ministers. And how is that going to affect our school systems? It definitely will, because remember, every new government or every new term, they have new initiatives, they have new missions, new expectations of them by the country. And so definitely education is one that is very tied in with politics, because it's something that every politician wishes to improve and excel on, so that they can obviously up their view in terms of being a politician.
Feeding on to that comment, I think we need to, as parents, as teachers, as a school system, view change in a positive way, because as you're saying, the transition brings with it a lot of new passion towards
new ideas,
the cause,
yes,
and trying to make their mark and make the difference. So the election could be something that's very positive on education. I remember a few years ago when then the Deputy Minister of Education, Mr. Enver Surti, announced that he wants the initiative of safety committees to be placed at schools. So he encouraged SGBs to have such committees at schools, again, protecting learners, protecting now with the violence on educators, protecting educators, making our schools safe, and really seeing that schools should be an environment of safety, of love, of care, and therefore the learning process can be enhanced.
And we know, for anyone who has or is available, has any communication over social media, watches the news, listens to the radio, we know what the current situation in South Africa is in terms of violence in schools. But just before we get into that, I like your comment, Shaista, about how election can be positive, the change that it brings about. And totally moving away from our topic of choice today, parents, you know, I find that now, and in our generation, me and you, Shaista, we were young, but we were there when we actually transitioned from apartheid into democracy. And I think the youth of today have lost the value of the rich history of South Africa. So take an election year to just reinforce that when your kids at home, how far South Africa has come, how we managed to transition without civil war, etc., and now getting back to...
Especially, you know, everyone's talking about this fourth industrial revolution that's going to take place, where the media is painting a stark picture on violence and elections and politics, all in a negative connotation. We need to make our kids aware that they do have, at the age of 18, I'm teaching matriculants, their say, their human right to vote, the difference that they can make in their small numbers within their communities. Because look, you're not looking at the larger picture, who's going to win the election. You're looking at the smaller picture, where your ward, certain representatives which you as a community are voting for, will place the direction of your community towards positivity. So again, just making them aware that every little vote in their country and their say helps to make the country more positive and better.
and it directly impacts their lives. But now I'm different from you, Shaista, in that while you tell the children about the small picture, I look at the big picture, because I tell them, imagine from so many hundred thousand, and if your one could have made the difference, because children will often tell you, I'm just one. I tell them, but one can actually be the deciding factor. Yeah. And what if your lack of, or your laziness, or your complacency in saying, I am just one, actually swayed the result in something that did not benefit you. But getting back to violence in the media, it is something that has been so current. It's such a hot topic from last year. We are inundated with these videos, especially of how learners have been abusing teachers. And very often you'll find that when we talk of violence in education, we concentrate on the bullying. And while that is a major, major issue, this violence in the media being available for everybody to, when I say participate, I mean view, to participate in, it actually has carried down and trickled down into the behavior and attitude of our children.
You know, 10 years ago, we were discussing topics as life coaches and things on bullying, child on child bullying, female on female. We have reached a stage now where we're taking on child on teacher bullying, because the common law principle of locus parentis is no longer guiding educators in the role of discipline, because there's so many rules and restrictions. Well, we all know about the corporal punishment being taken away, but a simple instruction like leaving a classroom if you are being disruptive is actually frowned upon now by the basic Department of Education, where you cannot extract a learner from a classroom anymore.
And sometimes you also cannot walk out of a classroom if you feel intimidated. So all this red tape around discipline is actually giving learners the upper hand over the educator.
And bearing in mind, safety is a fundamental precondition for teaching and for learning. So violence impacts terribly, where teachers now are losing their ability to just teach because they're disciplining so much. And let me just give you a quick stats, because you know I love stats, right? So in Limpopo,
before you do that, my family, they actually laugh at us about that, because they say that you just talk and Shaista has the information. And
no.
I'm like, no, we work. That works.
But
yes.
Also, how many people actually pick up a newspaper and read on education? Have you found that people are just not aware of what's going on around them anymore?
And you'll find that education is something, like you said, that we are all a part of because of our children. And if you are someone listening who doesn't have children, older listeners may have grandchildren, nieces and nephews, and then you may be in the university system, and all this is controlled under the banner of education. So you need to be well informed as to what your rights are, but also what your responsibilities are in the role that you are playing in the education system.
So pupil against teachers, the reported cases, so the ones that actually made it to the local law enforcement, was 942 cases. And a lot of these, Sumaya, only came to light because videos went viral. And now you must remember, schools don't encourage cell phones to be brought to school.
So that's already a violation.
Right, so it's a violation. And those that are unreported go unseen.
Yes, definitely. And you know what? A study in America has actually proved that these websites that choose to air or to publish videos of violence in schools, whether it be learner on learner violence or teacher learner on teacher violence, certain websites actually pay children to post the videos or to provide them with the videos. And I personally feel like these videos being available to everyone, while it is highlighting the discipline issue in the school, it's also giving children the sort of freedom to believe that I can act in a certain way. Because remember, again, that mentality trickles down.
There was a portfolio meeting in Parliament on the 13th of February, and one of the topics that were discussed was safety at schools, and this whole idea of how the media ruckus sort of plays a big role in terms of heightening situations at school. So where children see these videos being taken, it's almost like they're role-playing for the camera. And bystanders, so there was a vote that was taken in one particular private school where they asked children to view a specific video of learner on teacher bashing. And they said, so who's the bully in the situation? Is it the learner that's hitting the teacher? Is it the teacher that's hitting the learner? Or is it the bystanders with their camera phones out?
And I know that the result was actually that almost every single participant in the study said that when they viewed the video, they found that the bystanders were the actual bullies or culprits in the situation, because remember that if a child is speaking out or acting out or actually becoming violent towards the educator in class, one child, an educator can deal with. You may sometimes feel intimidated, but we have been trained to speak out. We know how to carry out discipline measures in line with legislature. But when you've got a class of children jeering and cheering that child on to actually attack you as an educator, that is when the educator loses all their rights. And I actually have a question in right now that's so interesting that says, are our kids rewarded for taking a political stance to problems within the school because activism is amazing in children? I have multiple answers to this that I can answer in so many different ways, because yes, children do need to be aware. Children need to be aware of what their rights are. But again, with everything, politically, there is a protocol to follow. So first, you write a letter to the management of the school in terms of, I am a child and this is what is making me uncomfortable. Then, if you don't get any joy from that, why don't you ask for a debate in class? Petitions. There are so many different types of action that can be taken in terms of you being an activist before you actually need to be violent or rude to an elder person or your educator.
And let's not forget that each and every school is an individual institution where their code of conduct guides how a specific child is meant to behave, how a specific teacher is meant to behave. Job descriptions are there for educators. Also, with the Basic Department of Education, they've incorporated material on bullying, on teachers, the role of parents, the role of teachers, the role of learners, non-violent situations and how to react, values, respect to oneself as well as others, all part of the life skills syllabus. I mean, this particular subject has only came into play now in the last decade or so because there was a need for it, because we do not know how to conduct ourselves anymore.
And so many times while we concentrate on the human rights in terms of human rights of children. And remember that of children's, I'm an English teacher, I said children, okay, of our children, sorry. my family are going to finish me for this, my students as well. When we concentrate on the human rights of our children, remember that they have been given extensive rights according to our constitution. But as much as we need to look at their rights and respect their rights, the rights of the educator should not be ignored at all.
You know, if you look at the big news channels, News 24, Guardian, wherever I've read, there are a lot of new articles coming into light about how, is it the role of the parent to place discipline, or is it the role of teacher? So we're getting kids coming to school from homes where ideally that's their first place of learning, the learning environment, coming to schools with these preconceived ideas, with the mirroring of behavior from homes, from TV, from internet. So if you as a parent are not picking up on this type of behavior and attitude from the home and you're leaving it to the schools to correct, we're really doing a big disservice as parents, because remember at the end of the day, even though we are stakeholders together, we want the same thing, the benefit of the child and the best of the child, if your child is doing this to a particular educator, you have failed as a parent.
100%. And also, Our fear is that the availability, while social media has been a very beneficial tool in exposing a lot of corruption everywhere in the world, social media in this way, I feel, is actually doing a disservice to our children. The ability to record a learner actually violating or bashing up an educator should not be something that is celebrated by the youth. And as parents and as educators, we look at it and we find that it's so sad, it's so disgusting, but we don't actually sit and think about what are our youth seeing. They sometimes get this idea that it's okay, that if something unpleasant happens in the classroom, I can take that sort of action. If we even take out physical violence, the verbal violence or the verbal abuse that is being conducted upon especially female teachers in the classroom, in high schools, where the children have no limits, they have no boundary in what they choose to call their educators.
And you must remember, Samira, there's, as you're saying, the two aspects of physical and then psychological. When you are being mentally taunted or mocked at, or when instruction is given, they're giggling, or that sort of emotional repercussion, it affects the teacher. It affects the mood, it affects the vibe, it affects your classroom. Again, the learning process is all being disrupted by this type of attitude that the learner has.
But then again, just tying in with what you just said about a discipline and whose job is it or whose responsibility is it, very often you would find that parents tell children that you go tell your teacher that, and that is a very, very negative way to handle anything that affects your child, because remember, we all have children and our hearts absolutely go out to our kids when they come home and something unpleasant happened or occurred in the classroom on that day. And instead, we should approach that situation again using or according to protocol by telling our child, go tell your teacher that I said, or go tell your teacher you will not. It already grows that attitude that there's no line between me and the teacher. I can show a little bit of
assertiveness,
and I'm going to get my way. And there is not a way for any human being to deal with any type of conflict or negativity.
And you know, coming back to our very first question, why choose such a heavy topic when we're talking about education as teacher moms? It's because we are the only ones that can have an impact on our own kids. And as parents, we need to soften them up. We need to find tools in which to like basically show them that there is good, there are ways, there's techniques, there are tools in which to equip themselves to remain human in every situation. You know, they call these types of behavior inhumane, animal-like behavior, because violence is not the go-to. It should not be our instinctive first reaction. And I think as parents, we play a vital role in inculcating that type of culture in our children to be empathetic, to be compassionate, sensitive, understanding. If someone's having a bad day, do you react with giving them or telling them off in that situation, or maybe extracting yourself or offering compassion? So there's various ways to tackle that.
I've just got a question that's so relevant to what you just said. Isn't it the teacher's responsibility to listen when my child hears something to say and not just brush it off? And then again, you do have educators who sometimes are so busy. Remember, we have curriculum coverage and we have such a short time frame, and sometimes it does happen where a child just gets brushed off and a child feels like their opinion hasn't been valued. But again, there is a protocol. Approach the school, and even if you as a parent don't want to make it an official matter, approach the school, ask to just talk to the educator by themselves and say, listen,
by no means are we making excuses that the teacher cannot address the problem, but what we're saying is, if I'm in a classroom, and I've had this many times of 49, at one stage I was teaching primary school, which is not my forte, because then every little thing is brought to your attention by the kids, you are going to have moments where you're going to say, guys, I don't want to hear it. And it happens that way because, again, we have a specific job. It is to educate your children. It is to leave them with knowledge, beneficial knowledge. And certain situations are less, let's say, important than others in that particular moment?
They don't need to be addressed at that time. Certain, like madam, he's touching me. Sometimes when you say, guys, stop, we are learning, then you find that everybody sits still in their own seat and the problem is addressed automatically. Instead of taking out 10 minutes, why did you touch him? Was it necessary? So it's very, very important to, and you know, our little children sometimes, so because everyone got to pick up their hand and say, I did this, I did this, and now 20 minutes of your lesson has been missed, has already passed, and then you say, okay, everyone, it's time to do work, and maybe then a little child didn't get to hear their say, and that could lead to a situation like this, where a child feels as though they are being ignored. Sometimes, like I said, as a parent, just bring it to the educator's notice. But there is definitely times where we cannot listen
and
to every child.
Also, Sumaya, with the changing phases and the growth process in schools, where you get the children now from a motherly foundation-based environment coming up to a more stricter environment, and then when we're in high school,
structure.
It's military mode and structure, you need to also teach your children what information is important. So when we tell them we're not listening to you now, it's also giving them a sense of trying to deal with situations themselves and not always having an adult authority, because we need to make our kids street smart, you know, street wise.
And also independent learners, because remember, from face to face, and nothing in the education system has been designed by accident. It's all on purpose for a reason. So from face to face, children have to learn. From the foundation phase, there is that exceptional, like Shaista said, mothering care. And then when you move into the intermediate the phase, and then moving into your senior phase and then your FET phase, more responsibility is put on the child, and then also the level of the information that they need to take in is also increases very, very vastly. So they need to be responsible in terms of packing their bags, in terms of covering a certain amount of activities in the class and at home. And by us being a bit strict and sometimes saying, guys, it's just work, it doesn't mean that a teacher is somehow being unsympathetic or inhumane in the classroom.
I think it was a very lovely topic that we had today, Sumaya, and it brings us to the end of the show now. Just to make the listeners aware out there, we are once a month on Radio Islam as an education show. We highly appreciate all the feedback and comments that you give us, and we would also request topics that interest you as parents and as educators even out there, to assist us and tell us what do you really want us to tackle, what are the pressing factors in your communities around you that you would like us to discuss.
I particularly like feedback or to hear from my colleagues, my fellow educators, what is your stance on this violence in the media? Is it intimidating when you are in your classroom? Do you find that behavior has been trickling into the attitudes of our kids?
Thank you so much for listening to us on Radio Islam International. Teacher Mom signing off with myself, Shaista Token. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.